Okay, good afternoon. I think most of you are aware that I'm having to dash off and do a couple of pre-records for some of the shows tonight, so I don't have a whole lot of time, but I'll cut my comments to very quick things and then we can take any questions that you might have. But we've obviously covered the deaths of our soldiers in Afghanistan at the press conference earlier today. On my ministerial activity for the week, tonight I'm formally launching the New Zealand Antarctic Research Institute, a public-private sector partnership that will create a new source of dedicated funding for Antarctic research. A press release was issued from Antarctic New Zealand on the subject today. New Zealand's scientific research in the Antarctic is currently administered by a range of public institutions. Much good work has been done, but it's hard to get a full picture of the research being undertaken and to kickstart the sort of collaborative research that will drive even greater advancement of our scientific understanding of this special part of the world. The New Zealand Antarctic Research Institute has been established with $5.3 million in core funding from the Aotearoa Foundation, all private sector funding coming from Julian Robertson of the Robinson Foundation. I'd like to take this opportunity to formally acknowledge Julian, his incredible generosity towards New Zealand, and thank him for this project. We expect the New Zealand Antarctic Research Institute to have a big impact. Not only do we expect to see an increase in the output of New Zealand's Antarctic research, but we also expect an increase in professional opportunities and career pathways for our scientists. Tomorrow morning, along with Science and Innovation Minister Stephen Joyce and Communications and IT Minister Amy Adams, I will be launching Business Innovation, the government's second Business Growth Agenda Progress Report. The report lays out how we can take advantage of all of the opportunities in this arena, encourage greater investment in research and development right across the country, and better commercialise smart ideas into successful products. On Thursday, I'll also be speaking at an event at the Auckland War Memorial Museum, hosted by the Royal Society of New Zealand. I'll be joined by Stephen and my chief science advisor, Sir Peter Gluckman. In terms of the rest of activity this week, my schedule is subject to changes following the events in Afghanistan. My office will issue advisories as appropriate, but the current plan is to be in Wellington tomorrow and Wednesday, Auckland and the Waikato Thursday, and Northern Hawke's Bay on Friday. In the House this week, we'll complete the third reading of the Appropriation 2012-13 Estimates Bill and continue the committee stage of the Exclusive Economic Zone and Continental Shelf Environmental Effects Bill. And that might take questions.
With regard to Afghanistan, have now going after a specific bombmaker, does that make New Zealand more of a target?
No, we don't believe so. I think it's important to understand what the process is and has been for some time, which is obviously to try and ensure that the insurgent activity that puts that risk to our soldiers is absolutely minimised, and wherever we can get intelligence on that insurgent activity, then we have acted with the support of our coalition forces. Obviously, this bomb maker, if he is the person responsible for the deaths of our soldiers, is not only very sophisticated, but this was a very large bomb, and over 20 kilos of explosives, as we understand it. So it's a very significant bomb, and we just need to try and intercept him and ensure that he can't carry on these activities.
When General Jones says that the mine-resistant vehicles are being deployed in parts of Afghanistan where they're better needed, are you satisfied with that statement?
Well, my understanding is is not the issue that there isn't the capability. In other words, that there's not other LAVs that we couldn't deploy, and that somehow the Humvees are being used as a sort of substandard piece of kit because we're using our LAVs somewhere else. The explanation I've had is that the LAVs wouldn't be able to traverse the terrain that's most used, and the Humvees are largely used in less volatile areas. So it's about the terrain and the capability of the LAVs to be used in those areas. That's my understanding.
But the LAVs can go between Dahabe and Primero,
can't they? Yes, I think they can. But I think his main point was that it's not a cost issue, or it's not an issue about us having that sort of capability. It's about the terrain that they used in and where they used.
Broadening out patrolling areas was mentioned after the last deaths. Did that have to be approved by Cabinet or the Defence Force? Whereabouts is that actually happening now?
Well, Cabinet has approved that capability. We did that, I think, 10 days or so ago. The in terms of the capacity to go into the neighbouring province, there's that's done both on a case-by-case basis, but it's also possible, I think, as I understand, to get more blanket approval for that. Those missions haven't started yet, but they may at some stage in the future.
And is it your advice that the New Zealanders are already taking up the slack for the Hungarian forces?
Well, we are working alongside the Hungarians. Their primary focus has been in the northern part, as I understand it, of Baglan. There's certainly an area where insurgent activity has been able to be to get a foothold, and that's in the southern part of the Baglan province, and that's the area where New Zealand might increase its patrolling activity to try and have an early detection capability of these insurgents so that they can't effectively get established in the field. So that the argument is either you're reactive or you're proactive, and the argument put up by the CDF is if you're more proactive, they're less likely to be able to get established and get the bombs, you know, laid in the ground and deployed in the operations undertaken.
But is that because the Hungarian forces are reluctant to go into those areas because of the activity?
Well, I'm not going to go into those issues at length. All I can tell you is the advice I've had is that it would be in the best interest of the security of our people for New Zealand to take a more proactive role in that southern part of Baglan.
At the time that the last two soldiers were killed, had you started to consider an early withdrawal in the earlier part of 2011?
Yes, so eventually there'll be a bunch of paperwork, no doubt, your OIA, and what it'll show is we've been considering this option of when we withdraw. So the issue is either the latter part of 2013, which is sort of more September, or there's always been a date on the table, potentially around sort of more April-ish. And the Cabinet's preference, I think, is more around April. But it's really around the logistics of a number of things that are happening there in terms of the way that we work with our partners. And it's also, it's a scaled transition, so it's not quite straightforward saying everything happens on one particular date. Some reasons why we don't necessarily want to go through all of that publicly. But yes, that's been our position. I think I've publicly said, well, look, it may be later 2013, but that's, in my mind, always been our worst case scenario. We'd prefer it to be early if we can.
We can't withdraw without the help of Australia, is that what you're saying?
No, it's not so much, that's not the issue. There's a number of other things happening up there that we have various work we do with partners, and that makes a difference in terms of our capacity to successfully and safely try and bring our people out, and that's driving part of the timing, as well as, look, just in general, it's part of the transition we've been agreeing with our partners.
The colleague said late 2013 in May, so what's changed the last 3 months?
Look, I may have to come back to you on it because I'm not 100% sure I can publicly tell you exactly the reason why, but there is a reason that means that a later date is probably not possible, even if we wanted to stay longer, and we don't want to necessarily stay longer.
But why did you foreshadow the earlier date now instead of 2 weeks ago?
Well, we haven't finally agreed that. We think about 2 weeks away from making that final decision, but what we've been, because it's contingent on some work that one of our partners is doing and the logistical capability of us getting out, we've been going back and forth with that particular party to see whether there's flexibility in the way that they operate, and that's been an ongoing dialogue where we've put up lots of different options to try and understand what their preference is, but without sort of going into details, and look, I might be able to publicly say this, I'm just not sure, so I'll check it before I say that, but essentially, the advice we've had from that coalition partner is that there's no flexibility in what they're doing, and therefore April is likely to be the date.
Can you
ask where that coalition partner is? It might be good if I'll just check whether I can talk about that publicly.
Hillary Clinton is set to be coming here for the forum. Is this something that you're going to be discussing up here at all?
Well, sure, there'll be a general discussion about Afghanistan. I've had a call this afternoon from Julia Gillard and from Tony Abbott. The ongoing sort of transition and exit of Afghanistan is always something that I tend to talk to, you know, other leaders about. So I'm sure we'll be talking to Hillary Clinton about that. But there'll be a range of issues we want to catch up on at the forum.
And is it likely that the forum put any anyway, but you might have to change your schedule if the funerals are later than you expected.
We don't have data yet on exactly when our soldiers will be returned, but the sort of top level advice is it could be Friday. But in the case of the previous two soldiers, that date actually moved around quite a lot. We were originally told it was the Tuesday, it turned out being much later on the Thursday. So the long and short of it would be, I'll be going to the funeral. If that doesn't mean I don't go to the forum, then I don't go to the forum. But it's highly likely that the memorial services will be held before I leave for the forum.
What can we expect from the innovation report tomorrow?
I'll leave it for tomorrow morning, but I think good examples of how the government is making progress in the area that we think can lift economic growth, what's actually required to build greater innovation, and more talk about what's happening with the Advanced Technological Institute and the role that it will play alongside NZTE.
More R&D incentives?
I wouldn't say it's in detail that exactly, no.
Can I just ask you about a case involving a US Homeland Security official visiting here on a second-hand Fulbright study? This
seems
to be quite a lot of mystery surrounding a report who is supposed to write, etc. Are you aware of that situation, and is anyone from DPNC involved in that, or the agents of other agencies?
I don't think DPNC is involved. Look at a really high level, because of the media reports, it's been brought to my attention. What I can say is that my understanding is that there is a dispute between a number of the agencies and the accuracy of what was in the draft report. So ultimately, you know, whether there's a final report and how that issue gets resolved is really a matter between the gentleman in question and the lead agency, which I think is Customs.
Last week, Cora Bennett said that she wouldn't rule out releasing private information about citizens in the future. Is that something that you would endorse your ministers doing?
Well, I think she, if I understand, I wasn't here, but my understanding is that she hasn't said that she would do it again. She was simply asked a sort of hypothetical question that she can sort of directly answer. I've had some discussions with her about the matter, and I think it's fair to say it might be very unlikely it would happen again.
Do you
but
have any... Does that mean you've told her that she should come back from those comments and not do it again?
No, she indicated to me that because there is a million permutations and combinations in life, she couldn't rule out every one of those. But in reality, she thought it was very unlikely to be back again.
Do you think it's a good move for the ministers to
make it? I'm not going to go and relitigate what's happened, because it was a pretty politically motivated case, and there was incredibly strong feelings on both sides, and the matter's gone through a long process where there's now a resolution, and my understanding is that all parties are happy, if I can use that phrase. So essentially what I would say is I think that's really the end of the matter, and I don't think we'll be seeing it again.
The circumstances were the same, though, would you endorse her behaving in the same way she did 3 years ago?
Well, that's a hypothetical question. I just don't think that's likely to happen again.
Do you have any initial views on the Electoral Commission's recommendations for changing the
Yeah, so I mean, basically the way I see that is that, look, the Electoral Commission has made their recommendations. It's now going through a public consultation. It would be probably a bit inappropriate for me to write in over the top and make some comments about that today. Let's allow the public to have their say. In the fullness of time, the National Party will respond, and I'm sure as Prime Minister I'll have some comments to make as well. But I think I'll leave that until the public consultation process is completed.
Just on the church withdrawal, you said April was the preference, September is another possible date. So if you missed April, could you do it in May or June, or would it go straight to September?
I think if I recall best, the advice is sort of really those 2 days, but I think it's highly likely it'll be around the April date.
Prime Minister, do you agree with the European Union's view that the sentence on the Pussy Riot trio is disproportionate and questions Russia's commitment to freedom of expression?
I've got to say I've been following the case in the world section of the newspapers I've been reading, so I can't say I've had any official advice on it, but look, it looked a bit disproportionate to me. 2 years is quite a long sentence for the comments that were made.
Will you be saying that to President Putin when you meet him?
If it comes up as a topic of conversation, but it's more likely that our ambassador would raise it with the Foreign Service in Russia.
You don't feel the need to raise it with them in a couple of weeks?
Well, look, I may do, but it's not necessarily the number one on the list.
Sorry. So would you rule out getting some advice on, or getting some better equipment from allies in a cannabis family for useful?
Look, the I suppose take a step back, but the obvious questions around are our people getting, do they have the best equipment, are they getting the best support? The answers that I get from the CDF in relation to those questions which I posed to myself are that we have the best equipment and we have tremendous support, and they're constantly looking at the ways to try and ensure that our people are protected as best as can occur in what is a war zone of Afghanistan. So I've encouraged them again today, as I did a couple of weeks ago, to absolutely go through line by line and make sure we're doing everything we can to provide the safest environment we can in the context of Afghanistan. And I've asked them to come back to me with any other recommendations he might want to make. And in the fullness of time, I'm sure he will. But the equipment issue has never been raised with me as an issue that would make a difference. So I've directly asked them, you know, if we had LAVs, if we borrowed equipment from the ally partner, would have it made a difference? And the answer is, the capacity of this bomb would have torn apart any vehicle on it, as we understand it.
I know there was some discussion about SAs this morning, but given the escalation in activity, will there be any consideration or any further consideration about sending them back in a combat role, apart from the kind of peripheral roles that you talked about this morning?
I'm going to take this as the last question, and then I'll go. The answer to that question is, look, it's very unlikely. If you're asking me a hypothetical question of would I redeploy the SAS to protect our people in Bamyan if I thought that would make their lives safer, the answer is I would do that in a heartbeat. But the issue is not that... Well, the issue is, or the advice is, that's not the issue. As the CDF said this morning, there are other special forces that could go in there and undertake the same role that our people could with high degrees of efficiency and stand ready to do so. The issue has been that for the SAS to be able to undertake those activities, or indeed any SAS, they need intelligence on the insurgents. And these insurgents have been very sophisticated in their activities. So we've been aware of them for some time, but we've been struggling to track them.
Sorry, just quickly, will there be any consideration of deploying those other SAS troops? I mean, they do have different skills, and they can move around, you know, a lot more undercover and, you know, into those areas.
So in terms of a combat capability, no. In terms of a planning group that could work, for instance, alongside a coalition SAS force, it's possible we'd send some people in that role. I think we either have deployed or will deploy the logistics person, just who is SAS based, again just on the basis that they have a slightly higher security clearance, and we think it just gives them a greater web into the special forces group that are on the ground in Afghanistan. But in the way that a New Zealander might think of the SAS, a sort of deployment of guns on the ground, that's the advice we've had is that's of no merit at this point.
Thank you.